And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Conlon is here.
Good afternoon, Phil. I'm doing well, thank you.
And we're going to be talking today with Norman Otis Richmond, who is a bluesologist and a journalist. And if you want to get a PhD in bluesology, you have to go to Norman. We're going to be talking about his article titled Remembering the Late Milton Blake on the 70th anniversary of his birth. You can find this article at radioregent.com, uhururadio.com, and there is Norman Otis Richmond WordPress.com. That's a good site. I recommend it. And we will talk at the half-hour point with Zafar Benkash, because we want some precision, just as last week, I think it was, we spoke to Scott Taylor about the issues in Iraq, Syria, this so-called coalition, and it's the opinion of the Taylor Report that these all the language around this matter is very obscure. Let's call it disinformation. There's a lot of disinformation. Zafar Benkash, Crescent International, somebody's got a lot of information. So we hope to correct and at least clarify what the issues are. And that'll be, as I say, about 12:30. But I believe we're joined now by Norman Otis Richmond, journalist and bluesologist. Are you there, Mr. Richmond?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hey, good. How you
Mr.
doing?
Mr. Taylor.
Yeah, we're all Mr. today. We're moving up. Someday we're going to be sirs, lords.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we have a long way to go. you've written a very important piece to remembering an important individual, Milton Blake. And this is, and by the way, I don't think in saying where people could read it, it's published in Pride.
Yes, sir. It's on the internet.
I think it was September 25th in pridenews.ca. I left that one out, radioregent.com.
Pride comes on out on Wednesday, so it's September 24th. Most of the papers come out on Thursday, but Pride comes out before everybody else on Wednesday, so it was Wednesday the 24th. Yes.
Well, let's start with, he had a name. I noticed everybody called him The Voice. Why was he called The Voice?
Oh, he was called The Voice because he had a bass voice, and he was very poetic and very smooth. He had a voice sort of like Paul Robeson or Melvin Franklin in The Temptations, and he was a poet, and, you know, people, he could command attention from men or women, so he used to, you know, if you really had a cause that you wanted to promote, he would be the man that you would get. He used to be the spokesperson for the Black Music Association Toronto chapter, and he used to, people got married, a lot of people, he married a lot of people, he spoke at people's weddings, that was one thing.
They wanted him at the wedding to, as a sort of not quite a priest or preacher, but...
Yeah. His father was a preacher in Jamaica, but Milton was not saying he was a spiritual man. He was into the Mahat. He was into the Egyptian situation, but he was. I knew Milton very well. I don't think he was a Christian or a Muslim, but he was into African spirituality.
Yeah, you mentioned that his approach was Pan-African. And that this was something that he was almost like a teacher on this subject of uniting communities. But tell us why did he think you needed to found the Black Music Association, which was the Toronto chapter was 1984. What was he looking to do?
He was looking to put together to plug the African-Canadian musicians into the international music market, because when we talk about Black music in 1984, the only person we could think about that was Canadian that was really had an international impact was Oscar Peterson. Mm-hmm. And Oscar Peterson, coming out of Montreal, he was discovered by Norman Grant. mm-hmm. a Euro-American and Norman Grant basically made Oscar Peterson an international figure. So our objective was to make, you know, try to plug the black musicians into the international music market. And when we say black music musicians, we're talking about not only the rhythm and blues, but the reggae, the calypso. And one of the things that we fought for was to get awards into the Juno Awards. We wanted to get Black Music Award into the Juno Awards, and we proposed that they start a R&B, a reggae, and a calypso category.
And he was a leader in that.
Yes, he was.
And in your article, you say there were 300 people demonstrated at one point. Was it the CBC building? Whereabouts was that?
We demonstrated in front of the O'Keefe. What is the Sony Center? When it was the O'Keefe Center.
Uh-huh.
And we had people like Kristen Joseph, Aita Sadu, a different book list. We had Henry Gomez. A lot of the people demonstrated around the Junos, but the 300 people we demonstrated for the South African concert. I remember. Yeah, we had Billy Bryans, and we had Messenger. We had Salome Bay and Jason John Perez. Jason did a song called "Free South Africa," which he recorded a song around that particular issue. Yeah, but Salome Bay. Yeah, we had a big demonstration that was on Bay Street. Yeah, where the South African concert was.
It must have had impact because the Black Music Association was formed 1984, and 1985 they decided to have awards for rhythm and blues and reggae.
Correct, and they did.
They moved pretty quick.
They did not recognize calypso, and they still have not recognized calypso. And our argument was that calypso was the first million-selling album in history was was Harry Belafonte's album Calypso, which
I got that one.
Yeah, and we also talked about the fact that Carabana is based around Taiso, calypso, soca music,
mm-hmm.
and
By the way, how did they hold out against you on that point? Because I think laymen, not bluesologists, but laymen know that reggae and calypso are two different things.
Yeah. So what happened was
at least when I try it,
they basically said there were not enough calypso recordings available. That was their argument. They wanted to bring 5 or 6 nominations so they could pick. That was the argument that they used. Yeah.
Okay. The counter would be that you have calypso talent. If you give an award, each succeeding year there will be more talent.
Oh, we made that argument, but Karis.
I mean, we're down to a handful of poets. Maybe we ought to just forget it, right?
Correct.
You know.
But we made that argument, and they, this is 2014, and there's still no calypso. There's a world music category, which, could be world music, could be polka or, anything,
Mm-hmm. This is Norman Otis Richmond. The article is remembering the late Milton Blake on the 70th anniversary of his birth. He died in 2007. You pointed out, you have a very nice point in this article, by the way, it's in pride.ca, that there were some black, I don't know if they were artists or people in the business, but they didn't agree with this, the approach of Milton Blake, yourself. And they had some comment that they weren't from Africa or they weren't involved with Africa. And you had a great, I'm going to let you say, what did somebody quote Malcolm X on that?
Oh, Malcolm X said that we wanted to have a convention in Lagos, Nigeria. And, Malcolm said that the people didn't want to go to Africa. And Malcolm X used to say, you left your mind in Africa,
He was also a broadcaster. Is that right?
Yeah, he was a broadcaster. He was a newsman in Jamaica. He was a broadcaster. He had a show on EKLN, Adam Vaughn was the station manager at that particular time, and Adam Vaughn heard him speak at a meeting, at a commemoration we gave for Sam Cooke, and he heard Milton speak, and he gave him a thing called a commentary on the Black experience, and then he started his own show called The Musical Triangle. But he also had, he had a show on a number of stations, Rock and Groove. He was on Chin Radio. He was on Chin Radio. He did news for Chin, and Chin sent him to to Jamaica to cover the election.
That was quite an event you had at the Sam Cooke meeting at the Blue, at the Blue Note.
Right.
And the brother of Sam Cooke came here, L.C.
Cooke. L.C. Cooke was here. L.C. Cooke, and also the son of Alan Klein. And he, his wife, he had married her then, but the woman that he married, they came too. You know, Alan Klein's son. Alan Klein was the manager of Sam Cooke and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And many people would remind you that Sam Cooke managed Alan Klein, but that's another story for another time, you know.
And it was the Musical Triangle radio show. Was that CKLN?
That was on CKLN. A Musical Triangle was, his concept was that, you know, Black music is African from the African continent, from the Caribbean, and from North America. So he would play, he might play Fela, he might play Calypso Rose, and he would play Teddy Pendergrass. You know, he played reggae, calypso, and he was a love man. He liked the world likes there's nothing like a good ballad. I guess, you know, when I was in Africa, I heard Nat King Cole every day, so you can't get away from those love songs. Although some of my dear friends always criticize us for playing love songs, but I don't think that I think the majority of the world.
I don't think there's a big future in hate songs, personally. this is Norman Otis Richmond. We're leaving out the big battles. Blake, Milton Blake, yourself, and others were part of, were led this campaign for boycott of South Africa.
Well, I also should mention that Milton Blake was very close to Dudley Laws, and he was a founding member of the Black Action Defense Committee. Yeah, he was a member. He was a part of the Black Action Defense Committee, and not only a member, but a founding member of the Black Action Defense Committee. And he was extremely close to Dudley Laws. I mean, they were two peas in a pod, you know, Dudley and Milton.
Yeah, that, by the way, again, this article can be found, it's at pridenews.ca, it was published September the 25th, and you can also go to normanotisrichmond.wordpress.com. I got to tell you, that's a great photograph of Milton, by the way.
Yes, it is.
That he's a very, what a great face, and if you attach his looks with the sound that this voice you described, a Robeson-like voice, you really got something. I'm amazed they didn't get the man into acting.
I think it
could have been great.
The problem he had with was that he was an anti-imperialist, and
that'll cut into your career.
He got into trouble when he went to cover. I guess I can say this. I will say this and get in trouble, but I'll say it anyway. He went to Cuba. He went to Jamaica to cover the election. Well, I think when Michael Manley was defeated by Thiago, and whoever was running the news department at Chin at that time instructed him to go down and get some dirt on Fidel, which he refused. Get some dirt on Cuba and Cubans and Fidel, which he refused to do. So.
Well, there's another award. That's a great story. I hope you know. Write about that. people always say, you know, standards of journalism, and the journalism is about who's the boss of the journal. That's what journalism is about, who's the boss. And the others will carry it out, or they will disappear. This is Norman Otis Richmond, and you mentioned imperialism, and there's a big movie out, and Denzel Washington. You're an admirer of the acting of Denzel Washington, but you didn't like this movie, The Equalizer. Tell us why.
The movie is anti-Russian, and you know, a lot of people have criticisms of Russia and so on and so forth, but this film makes the Russians public enemy number one. And many people around the world think that U.S. imperialism, with or without President Barack Hussein Obama, is public enemy number one. Mm-hmm. Now, the enemy, the biggest enemy, the equalizer is a guy who is an ex-CIA agent, and he resigned. He resigned and basically he was a CIA agent. He left the CIA and he basically got a job at a place, something like Home Depot or Walmart.
Everybody notices that. Yeah. It seems. Yeah. And yeah. Letterman had a joke. He said, the only problem with this character is that he appears to be a Home Depot employee and nobody can find him.
And there is a Russian girl who was controlled by the, she's being forced to sell her services mm-hmm. by the Russian mafia, mm-hmm. and basically they track, turns against them, where he basically comes out of the closet and, you know, he kills about 100 people. But his primary enemy that he was looking for is in Russia. His name is Vladimir Pushkin.
Yeah.
Now, Vladimir, yeah. Now, Vladimir could be Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, or yeah. I guess Vladimir yeah. Putin.
Yeah.
And yes. I believe Pushkin, Alexander Pushkin.
The most celebrated poet in the history of Russia.
And he is...
take them both down. That's it.
One of his parents is from Ethiopia, so there's an African connection with Pushkin.
Yes, there's a bust of his great-grandfather, in yes. which he's, by the way, clearly an African. We're not just debating. He's from Africa.
Right.
And
he's either from Ethiopia or Chad. But
somebody bought him as a servant for Peter the Great, but he was so talented and all that that they basically took him in the family.
Right. And... you know, basically...
So he's the villain.
He's the villain, yeah. Vladimir Pushkin. Yeah, Vladimir Pushkin. Yeah, he's a... So we're fighting the Russians again, and I know... I grew up in California, and at one time, growing up in California, they had us, including myself, we hated the Russians more than we hated the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
I spy and... All of those TV shows, a lot of those shows were basically anti-Russia. I mean, Russia's international situation, but I think they had the FBI fighting the Russians as well as the international forces, didn't they?
They had. I think anybody could stand up, whether it's a football player, basketball player. I remember all of them. I mean, there was a pole vaulter named Reverend Bob Richards, and he had to make sure that he was against the communists, and he bragged that he had... smuggled things into Russia. When he went to the Olympics, or to international competition, he was smuggling, he said.
Right.
He's very proud of it. yeah, so they're back on message. These things happen very quickly, don't they? I mean, it's been only in the past year that Putin went from being a kind of a nice guy that we talked to he isn't even on the agenda,
mm-hmm,
except as a target.
But, you know, Gerald Horn has a book called Class Struggle in Hollywood, 1930 mm-hmm. to 1950, Moguls, Mobsters, Stars, Reds, and Trade Unionists. And I would like to read a quote if I could find the quote.
Oh, if you please find it, I guess would be better.
And this is, you know, Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon come from California. I guess so did you, and so did I, right?
Yes. Well, I did.
Yeah.
I have recurring nightmares where Ronald Reagan puts his arm around my shoulder like we're pals. that's awful.
Now, Ronald Reagan became a leader of the Screen Actors Guild,
uh-huh.
and he talked about, this is a direct quote, more than anything else, it was the communists attempted takeover of Hollywood and its worldwide weekly audience for more than 500 million people that led me to accept the nomination to serve as president of the Screen Actors Guild and indirectly at least set me on the road that would lead me into politics.
Yeah.
And then Gerald goes on to, this is the last quote, he quotes Reagan saying, America faced no more insidious or evil threat than communism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. End of quote. Yeah.
Yeah, but which is, by the way, now transformed, a lot of people are scratching their heads, into
Russian
Russophobia.
Yes, because Putin is not a communist. Putin is a nationalist.
Yeah, there is a communist party. They're in opposition.
The communist party is in opposition to Putin. But, that's true, yeah.
It is curious phenomenon that one thought that it was about, allegedly it was about the ideology, but it turns out that this is a rival nation, and it has a choice, either submit or not, and apparently it chose not to submit.
I had some very difficulties today, and I had a lot of stuff written down, but I don't know, the film, The Equalizer, grossed, I don't know, was it $35 million in its first, or $45 million, I wanted that information in my hand, but I don't have it. But I think it's grossed a lot of money, and there's going to be a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading on Facebook where a guy that I know saw it in Brooklyn, and I guess Brooklyn is supposed to be the People's Republic. They call Brooklyn the People's Republic of Brooklyn, and Brooklyn is supposed to be, some people feel that Brooklyn is the New York City is in the vanguard when it comes to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But he said the People's Republic of Brooklyn, they stood up and cheered when the film was over, and they are asking, when is the sequel? And there is going to be a sequel, so I guess we'll... And they're not going to jump on China because they have too much... China has...
Well, they might get... You never know. They're on the shopping list.
They're on the shopping list, so they're in debt to China in terms of the money situation.
Yeah. Sometimes
North Korea,
yeah.
Cuba, Russia, mm-hmm. they're the targets now.
Yeah. Well, the comments I'm reading on the film is that it seems to be of a certain brand, but many people are saying they wish Washington had never gotten involved because it's like a number of the better actors. He seems to be choosing these kinds of films, which are called vehicles, and you make an awful lot of money and kind of take a bath afterwards. So does the theater-going public, as they call it. Anyway, Norman Otis Richmond, we're very grateful. It's great to talk about Milton Blake, and I hope people will go to normanotisrichmond.wordpress.com, and we'll probably call you about some more movies as they come up.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye-bye. Norman Otis Richmond. And it is a good article. Again, the other publications where you can find this article and more information, of course, RadioRegent.com, UhuruRadio.com, Diasporic Music, publication Burning Spear. Anyway, and pridenews.ca. So I covered them all. And he's got the greatest title, Bluesologist. We in the moments here before we speak to Zafar Bengash, I want to make sure I remind listeners that on October the 10th, there is going to be, and that'll be Friday, October 10th at 6:30 at Bet Satoon, 612 Markham, Toronto Forum on Cuba. Talks, and the title of the evening is from, I think I'm pronouncing this right, Hatuwe to the Cuban Five, Cuba's Independence Day, in 1868, October 10, it was the Grito de Yara, where the Cuban leader Carlos Manuel Cespedes called for a struggle for independence from Spain, and battles lasted for 10 years. Eventually, Spain prevailed. But it's regarded in Cuba as the initial struggle, and so it's respected as Independence Day. And on this occasion, at October 10 at 6:30, Bet Satoon, 612 Markham, the Honorable Javier Ruiz, the Consul General of Cuba, will speak, and Dr. Keith Ellis, Professor Emeritus, Department of Spanish and Portuguese, and an Emeritus Professor, don't get any bigger than that. There will be an animation film, there is an art exhibition, and there will be, and there are also miniature paintings that are going to be, so it'll be a combination art, film, and talks. And again, it's 6:30, this October the 10th at on Friday, Bet Satoon. Last week on the show, we spoke with Christopher Black and congratulated him and listened to his and talk about the freeing of his client who'd been in prison in Arusha, Tanzania for 14 years and his acquittal. And he's one of the few who's been able to return to rejoin his family. It is of interest, I think it will be of interest to our listeners to know that Reuters on, get the date of it, but oh yeah, the 28th, Reuters published a story, Rwanda Courts Forgotten Men, and it discusses at some length, and it's an excellent report. Of course, it leaves out many details, but it's certainly important that Reuters has published this story, saying that the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and also the International Criminal Court seem to have a problem. They don't. They've set up a court which didn't respect the concept of presumption of innocence. Had they done so, they would have, at the other end of the process, had somewhere to go for those who were found innocent. There are now approximately 10 individuals in Arusha, Tanzania, who've been released from prison, the majority acquitted people, but others who've served their time, and they are in limbo thanks to the wonderful planning of the United Nations justice system. I call that genetically modified justice. Genetically modified in that they didn't account for presumption of innocence or the possibility someone would be acquitted. So that's the, you will find that in Reuters, Rwanda Courts Forgotten Men, and that's September the 28th.